I call the March 3rd, 2026, not March 3rd, the wrong date on here. This is my fault. I'm on the wrong journal. There we go. March 9th, 2026, meeting of the House Transportation Finance and Policy Committee meeting today. Welcome to the meeting. We appreciate your interest and participation in the legislative process. To ensure everyone can view, hear, and understand today's proceedings, we ask for your cooperation in maintaining decorum and civility throughout this hearing. For the safety, security, and comfort of all attendees, please note the following guidelines. I, the committee chair, maintain control of these proceedings and establish the following expectations. Signs and placards are not permitted in the hearing room. Verbal outbursts, shouting, and disruptive behavior will not be tolerated. Applause or other audible demonstrations are not allowed. For safety reasons, standing or sitting in walkways and aisles or standing and or obstructing at your chair is prohibited. If you require any accommodation, please speak with our sergeant staff. And so they are the folks with the gold ties around here. Troopers and house security personnel are present to ensure everyone's safety. Those providing testimony will be given specific time limits, which must be strictly observed. If you receive an entrance ticket, please retain it as it may be required for re-entry if you leave the hearing room as well. If you can make sure that all phones are silenced and make sure that the phones are turned off and not going to be ringing during the committee hearing, that would be great. Failure to comply with these guidelines may result in the removal from the hearing room. Our goal is to conduct these proceedings efficiently while ensuring everyone the opportunity to observe, participate appropriately. So thank you very much, everyone, for that. So we have quorum is present, and we will get started here. First item on the agenda is approval of the minutes. Representative Myers, may I have a motion to approve the minutes for March 4th, 2026?
Yeah, I make a motion to approve the minutes for March 4th.
Representative Myers moves the approval of minutes for March 4th, 2026. Any discussion on those minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? The motion prevails. All right, now we're going to move on to House File 3919, Representative Cha. So 3919, Representative Cha, welcome to the committee. I move House File 3919 be re-referred to the Veterans and Military Affairs Division. Representative Cha, please proceed.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, committee members. My name is Representative Cha, and I'm here to present 3919 to the Transportation Committee. I am a child of the Secret War of Laos, a refugee to the United States of America from 1980. My father served that Secret War from 1961 to 1975. I'm here along with SGU soldiers from the Secret War of Laos and their comrades here because this is important to them. It's important to the community. House File 3919 is to give state benefits to the veterans who serve in the SGU war from 1961 to 75. This legislation was passed last year, and over the last couple of months, we had the SGU task force that came together to put up a criteria for the SGU qualifications. I'm here to report back to say that we had some very good discussion with the 13 members on this council. And I'm going to keep it really short because I want an opportunity for Mr. Kelly from the MDVA to give us some details about those task force meeting and what we are requesting. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Cha. If you could please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair and members. For the record, John Kelly, Director of Government Affairs for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. And thank you to Representative Cha for bringing this bill forward and for the committee's time this afternoon. So as Representative Cha mentioned, the House File 3919 is the SGU Task Force recommendations language bill. So this bill contains language that was approved by the SGU Task Force, as well as technical recommendations from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. And lastly, it reflects, and the reason why the bill is before the committee today, it reflects negotiations between legislators on the task force who wanted to see some changes to the benefits. So last year, just to refresh members' memory for this bill, last year the legislature did a unique structure in terms of this law. It passed the law, passed definitions of SGU veterans, so rather than incorporate SGU members into the state definition of veteran in Minnesota Statutes 197-447, it added a new definition Minnesota Statutes 197-448 for a veteran of the secret war in Laos, and it enumerated a number of benefits. Then it also prescribed in Chapter 30 Session Law a task force be formed. This task force was four members of the legislature, a number of direct appointments from the department and the Minnesota Commander's Task Force, as well as an open Secretary of State's process of applicants with experience either as SGU or regular force veterans, veterans of the United States military or intelligence services, as well as members with knowledge of the secret war, and members that served in the U.S. military and were of Hmong descent. So they came up with these recommendations, and one of the benefits that was in the law that passed last year was the designation of veteran on a Minnesota driver's license. The task force made its recommendations. It did not change that, but through negotiations, the bill before you today adds some language to put some specificity on veteran and SGU veteran on a Minnesota driver's license. This was not part of the task force recommendations, but it came out of negotiations, continued negotiations between members of the task force from the legislature. In the SGU report, the commissioner noted that the recommendations of the task force were not final or binding. The way the law was designed is that the task force recommendations would come back to the legislature for a final passage of a final list of benefits. So some benefits also came off. There were a number of benefits around, for example, an honor and remember flag is a flag that's meant to be flown on public buildings. It's not an individual benefit, and there's things of that nature that were in kind of cleanup. So what's before you today and what will be before the legislature hopefully later on in session is a final list of benefits, including this specific designation on the Minnesota driver's license. The department doesn't have a position one way or the other on this. This is just the bill moving through its legislative process. But overall, we think it's a good, solid bill reflecting both the task force recommendations and negotiations between the legislature.
Thank you very much, Mr. Kelly. Is there anyone else that would like to testify on this bill? Please come forward. Thank you very much, sir, for your service and for everyone here who is a SGU veteran. Really appreciate you being here for this bill. So thank you very much for your service and for being here to talk through this. So if you could please state your name for the record and please proceed.
Too Young. I'm a member of the task force, the SGU task force. Good afternoon, chair and committee members. My name is Too Young. I am a retired U.S. Army Lieutenant Colonel. I served 28 years on active duty with the Army Medical Department as a pharmacy officer, 67 Echo. I have been deployed to both OIF in Iraq and OEF in Afghanistan. I am the recipient of the Bronze Star and the Army Medical Department 9 Alpha Proficiency Designation, the highest professional designation for the AMED officers. I am here today to support and encourage the Minnesota State Legislature to pass House Bill HF 3919. As a Hmong refugee from Laos and the son of an SGU officer, I am committed to advocating for the recognition of the SGU and the irregular force by the United States and Minnesota. These force fought as American proxy soldier during the secret war in Laos. My late father, Komandang or Major Yankee, was an SU officer in 1967, he was severely wounded in action and had to be flown to Thailand for urgent life-saving surgery. Despite losing 70% of the use of his right hand, he continued to serve with the SGU until 1975, when the communists finally took control of Laos. Some argue that the SGU and irregular force are not part of the U.S. military. Additionally, other claims that the American and the SGU fought the communists as allies. Therefore, the U.S. has no obligation and owe the SGU nothing. I strongly oppose these critics. According to the Geneva Convention, the U.S. was prohibited from stationing military personnel in Laos. The CIA intervened by creating, training, and fully funding the SGU and irregular force to act as American proxy troop. The CIA retained full control over the SGU. Every operation and bombing mission required CIA approval. A CIA case officer led most of the SGU unit into battle. They essentially served as their unit commanders. Therefore, the SGU and a regular force are the de facto American secret soldiers, and they should be recognized as American veterans. I have the privilege and honor of serving as a member of the Veteran of Special Guerrilla Unit and a regular force in Laos Advisory Task Force. I serve on the task force as a Hmong American Minnesota resident who serve in the United States Armed Forces. I am honored to work alongside the 12 other task force members to develop protocols and criteria. I believe the task force has fulfilled its mission as mandated by Minnesota Law 2025. The task force has completed its work. Now it is time for the legislature to fulfill its obligation by passing House Bill HF 3919. Once again, as a Hmong refugee from Laos, the son of an SGU officer, and a veteran from Minnesota, I'm proud to support House Bill HF 3919. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. Thank you to you and your family again for your service. Appreciate you being here and sharing your story. Representative Olson, you have an A3 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the A3 amendment. This amendment, you kind of look at it and you say to yourself, how do we make sure that we get this done? This bill can't get stuck in transportation. This bill needs to go back to veterans. They then need to figure out how to pay for it, and then they need to figure out any of the nuances. This is, in my opinion, not the jurisdiction of the Transportation Committee, although it is driver's licenses, which is within our purview. The conversation is regarding the cost of it and some of the nuances around the license. And so my amendment would, in fact, just take the money from the general fund and not from the Department of Public Safety, because I think that would be wholly appropriate for us to be able to get it out of this committee in order to get to the veterans where they can continue that conversation. For all those involved, I'm on the Veterans Committee. Representative Chan, I've had great discussions on this, and we're determined not to let this stop here. We're determined not to let it die in this committee. It's going to, I'm doing what I can to make sure this makes it to the Veterans Committee so we can finish the job and get this done for these soldiers and these individuals. So my hope is that everyone would accept this amendment, and then we can pass it unanimously back to the Veterans Committee, where I'm sure there'll be some finer tuning as we find out how much money we actually have, or if there is none. And if there is none, then we'll have to make adjustments to make sure that this happens. So I'd appreciate your vote.
Thank you, Representative Olson. Representative Cha, do you have any comments on the amendment?
Yes, I recommend to support the amendment, but I also have Commissioner Pong Chong from the DVS here.
Oh,
I have two words.
Let's finish with the amendment first.
Okay.
Please. Director Zhang, you can come up to the testifying table. We just want to finish the amendment as we go. Any questions on the amendment? All right, seeing none, all those in favor say aye. Aye. Anyone opposed? The motion prevails. Director Zhang, sorry about that.
Hi, Pong Zhang, Director for the Driver and Vehicle Services Division. Mr. Chair and members, I think Representative Chubb wanted me to just speak a little bit about the funding for the or the cost of the fiscal note, and those are related to just the changes that the vendor needs to make those changes. And so happy to take any questions, but it sounds like there's already been some movement on this.
Any questions? Seeing none, thank you very much, Director Jung. Does anyone have any questions on the bill? All right, seeing none, closing comments, Representative Cha.
Chair, can I request a few minutes to recognize the SGU soldiers in the room?
Absolutely.
Yes. To my left here are SGU soldiers from the Secret War of Laos. There is a gentleman in here. His name is Mr. Lee Yang. Could you please stand up? This gentleman here is a T-28 pilot trained by the Navy forces from 1971 to, I believe, 76. And I just want to recognize him along with all the other SGU veterans in here. They're not only Hmong, but Laos and Laotian SGU soldiers in this room. Could you please all stand up to be recognized? Shara? Thank you, Ms. A. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for House File 319 in this committee. Please remember that these gentlemen on my left here is awaiting our approval. It has been over 50 years since the end of the war, 1975. They are still with us. They're waiting to have their dignity restored, their honor recognized, and for us to give what is owed to them. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Representative Cha. And did you have something to say? Okay. With that, I renew my motion that House File 3919, as amended, be re-referred to the Veterans and Military Affairs Division. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? The motion prevails. Thank you very much, Representative Cha. And again, thank you very much to all of the veterans who are here today. Really appreciate it. Thank you. All right, next we will be moving to House File 1335. I'm going to hand the gavel to Representative Ream.
So the next bill is House File 1335. Chair Tabke, would you like to move your bill?
Thank you very much, Chair Ream. I move House File 1335. I'm not sure the proper protocol on this. As amended, we heard this bill last year, so do I do this as 1335 as amended?
Yes. So Chair Tabke, we will move House File 1335 as amended to be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee.
Thank you very much. That's my motion, Chair.
And I see that you have an A2 author's amendment. Could you please move and explain your amendment?
Yes. Would you? The A2 author's amendment changes the date, and I left it at my table, but it changes the effective date. So if we could do that author's amendment, I'd appreciate it.
Chair Kosmic.
Let's finish up with the A2 amendment, and then then we'll discuss the referral. Thanks.
Okay, so are there any questions about the A2 amendment? There are no questions. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The motion prevails. So Chair Tabke, now that the bill is in the form that you like, could you please explain your bill?
Thank you. House File 1335 enacts a provision in Minnesota state law that would mimic what's happening in 14 other states right now. So anytime people go through the airport, you see options for digital ID at the airport. You see it being used and accepted in more and more places across the state and so across the nation. And a year ago, we had a discussion about this bill, and it did not move forward at that time. And I'm hoping that today can give us, as we've learned, a lot more regarding digital ID and being able to use mobile ID, just so everyone understands how this works. It is just like a mobile payment system, only it is you tap to show your ID. And so it is integrated with Apple Pay, Google Wallet, those types of wallets on your phone. Nothing is required. No one has to have an ID. This is just a mobile ID. This is just a digital option for how you have a physical ID. And so you have a physical ID is still required to be had and is necessary. But what this does is adds convenience. It adds security. It adds a lot of different really important components. As we talked about last year, if someone is going to be ID'd at a restaurant or a bar, what this will do is allow someone to be ID'd without having to give over their physical driver's license, which has your home address on it, has your name, it has all those things. And so what you would do is just when you pay, if you use a tap to pay kind of thing or use a chip to pay, it would be the exact same type of process where you just tap and then that shows that you are of age to be buying alcohol, or you're of age to be renting a car. When you're checking into a hotel, you can use your driver's your digital ID in order to do that. So it adds convenience, security, safety. Over the course of the last year, we've had a lot of conversations with different folks, and like especially right now, the bar and restaurant industry really wants this to happen, and we'll be hearing some testimony from them in just a moment here, because it is something that is it. Fake IDs have gotten really, really good, as I'm sure anybody who has a teenager knows how this works and has been educated about that. These fake IDs have gotten nearly impossible to tell for someone who is just looking at it, but a digital ID would very much help with this situation, and restaurants are asking for this type of support so that they can be staying within the law and doing all of the right things. And so, Madam Chair, I'd like to address if Chair Kosnick had questions or wherever that was before we get going with testimony on things.
Chair Kosnick.
Well, thank you. I know that there's an A1 amendment too, but appreciate the introduction. It just kind of led to my initial concern. The motion was made to pass it to the Ways and Means Committee, which generally means it doesn't have implications in other committee areas. Chair Tapke talked about using a digital ID for bars and restaurants. That suggests to me that it should be heard in the Commerce Committee and those issues be discovered and talked about. Public safety should have an opportunity to weigh in on how law enforcement would use and deal with a digital ID. My biggest concern is the data privacy on this. We've talked about it last year, so kind of like Groundhog's Day again. So the judiciary chair, I know for sure, wants to hear this bill. So we have an issue with that part. So I do not believe the motion to Ways and Means is the correct motion, but we can continue discussing the bill and then work on that.
Thank you, Chair Kosnick. Chair Tapke, so are you, I see you have an A3 amendment. Can we move forward on that? Could you move and explain that amendment?
Chair, if we could just address this real quick, it would be great. If Chair Kosnick, if you'd like this to go to judiciary, I'm more than happy to be accommodating of that. We just didn't think that last year it was requested or required to go there, but if you've talked to the chair and what they had said last year is not the same thing, then that is totally fine. More than happy to move this forward out of transportation today and head to judiciary.
And then just for Madam Chair.
Chair Kosnick.
Sorry. Catch me up here for a second. What are we doing with the I have an A1 amendment in front of me. That was adopted last year, but not engrossed.
Chair Tapke. Oh, members.
Maybe Mr. Burris could help us remember what we did last year and the status of the A1 amendment.
Mr. Burris.
Madam Chair, Representative Kosnick, the amendment H-1335A1 was adopted last year in committee, and then the bill was laid over. So the current state of the bill includes both the A1 and then the A2 that was just adopted by the committee. So there's not engrossment because the bill hadn't moved out of committee last year.
Thank you, Mr. Burris. Chair Kosnick?
Okay, thanks for clarifying that. That makes sense. It's Monday. I'm a little slow on that one. There was talk about an E3 amendment. Do I not have that in my packet?
Yes, there should be an A3 amendment, A4 amendment, and A5 amendment in your packets. Chair Tapke.
Chair Ream, I would prefer to go through testimony and get that through the bill first. The A3 and the A4, just so everyone knows, we are bringing those up for discussion purposes to make sure as co-chair in transportation, I want to make sure that we are communicating to everybody, like not only what we want to get done today, but also looking to the future, where we want to go years down the road. And the A3 and the A4 amendment are out for discussion on those so that we can continue to have that discussion going into the future. So those will be moved and withdrawn. So both of those two are, as I talked to Chair Kosnick about, both of those will be withdrawn.
All right, thank you. So we can now move ahead and hear testimony then from
yes,
our testifiers. And it looks like we have two testifiers here, Brian McDaniel and Amanda Doerr, if they could come forward and introduce themselves. Thank you. We can start with Brian McDaniel, please. If you could introduce yourself and then proceed.
Thank you very much, committee chairs, members of the committee. My name is Brian McDaniel.
Just taking care of you.
Thank you. My name is Brian McDaniel, and today I represent the Minnesota Licensed Beverage Association. The MLBA has been a nonprofit association working to advocate, educate, and protect the interests of liquor license holders in the state of Minnesota. I promise to keep my comments brief. The licensed beverage industry faces inherent challenges because we professionally sell and dispense alcohol as a controlled substance. The hospitality industry takes tremendous pride in this responsibility and is always striving to ensure public safety. The MLBA and its over 2,500 members support legislation that will make it more difficult for minors to access alcohol both on and off premise. We know several other states have adopted or are looking to adopt a digital ID and have listened to their challenges. We, like many others, have concerns about privacy issues and look forward to playing a key role in all steps forward to better secure our industry from illegal access to alcohol. Being part of the process to develop a digital ID will allow us to provide unique firsthand experiences specific to the beverage alcohol space. This will also give liquor license holders confidence in the process because we represent them and we're present. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. If you could introduce yourself and then please proceed.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, Co-Chair Kosnick. My name is Amanda Doerr. I'm the Director of Government Affairs for the Minnesota Automobile Dealers Association. Looks like I'm giving you a little sneak peek for the A3 amendment, which we're here to provide support for. This amendment would take an incremental step in modernizing Minnesota's title and registration system by directing DVS to accept electronic signatures and electronic documents. At MADA, the transition to e-title has been an area of staff time and energy. We spend time at national conferences, learning from our peers in other states. We've also spent a few years working with other stakeholders in Minnesota attempting to gain consensus on an e-title proposal, but we haven't gotten there yet. From auto dealers to deputy registrars to financial institutions to DVS, we all know that e-title is eventually coming and that Minnesota is behind as compared to other states. However, the transition is messy and disruptive to everybody's current way of doing business. So no one has wanted to be the one leading the charge on this. MADA believes that incremental progress is still progress, and so this amendment might not take the state all the way to e-title, but it's a very good step forward in modernization. So thanks you, Representative Tabke, for offering the amendment and getting the conversation started.
Thank you, Ms. Doerr. Are there any other testifiers who'd like to testify? Any members of the public? I see there's one person coming up to the chair here. If you could please introduce yourself and then proceed.
Madam Chair and members, good afternoon. My name is Jim Hurst. I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Deputy Registrars Association, an association that's been in existence for 50 years, and hopefully for a number more, but based on some of the amendments before us, our future is in question. Why do I say that? Well, we have a number of amendments here, so let me begin first with one thing I'd like to do, and this has nothing to do with the deputies, but just procedurally, the A1 amendment that I understand was adopted last year. I do have one question. Come back to me later, but page 2 of the amendment on the A1 amendment, line 2.14, calls for deleting lines 15 and 16 of the underlying bill. Those lines purport to delete the expiration date for these credentials. I'm just curious if that's appropriate. I know it's tied to the underlying physical document, but I would think that you would want consistency between the electronic version and the physical document so that there's no confusion as to the actual date at which it expires. I'll leave that aside, and like I said, just wanted to point that out. Next, on the A3 amendment, which was just discussed by the previous two testifiers, in general, the deputy registrars recognize the value of moving towards e-titling. We're not quite there yet. This is, as the previous testifiers said, is an incremental step towards that. I think that that is a smart way to proceed with this. However, we do have one concern overall with electronic submission of supporting documents. Deputy registrars at the heart are the auditors, and they're the front line to make sure that there's no fraud going on. My concern is that there needs to be some language in here that makes sure that if a document is submitted to us electronically, if we sign off on that but it ends up to be fraudulent in nature, where's the liability? Right now, if a deputy registrar approves a transaction or a transaction, sends it on to the state usually takes our word and rubber stamps and says, yeah, it's good to go. However, there are certain times where we overlook things inadvertently, and then the onus is on the deputy registrar, and they can be sued. I just want to make sure that as we go forward with electronic submissions of documents as well as eventually towards e-titling, that concern is covered so that deputies who accept things with the understanding that it is accurate and that it is not fraudulent, if it turns out to be otherwise, we're not the ones left being sued. And suffice it to say on that. However, most of my comment wants to be directed towards the A4 amendment. The A4 amendment was brought forward, or was something that that the Chair Tabke brought to my attention late last week. The topic of it pertains to revenue sharing. Now, deputy registrars have long sought revenue sharing. And what is revenue and sharing in general? Well, in general,
Mr. Hurst, sure. If you could shorten your testimony,
by all means.
We need to go through a few amendments.
That's unfortunate. I certainly will, because quite honestly, the A4 amendment would basically put us out of business. This is the wrong approach towards revenue sharing. I would much rather see the committee spend some time on a bill such as House File 2605, which Representative Bjorn Olson has, which was introduced last year, rather than talk about something that was hastily drafted up just last week. I will suffice to say that this is the wrong approach. We want revenue sharing. It was a recommendation of the King Report. Many of you perhaps don't remember who the King Report was. That was 5 years ago. But that was one of the key recommendations that would make sure that the deputies stay in existence. And something like this is just yet another way towards eliminating the deputies who the customers quite honestly depend upon across the state. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Hurst. Any others first? If there are no other members of the public who wish to testify, looks like we have one more person who wants to testify. If you could please introduce yourself and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Sam Krieger with Hill Capital Strategies, representing the Deputy Registered Business Owners Association, or the private deputies in the state. Just to kind of go on what Jim had said earlier, this A4 amendment would appear to exclude the private deputies, which would lead to the closure of just about half of the offices in the state, which I think is probably an unintended consequence of this amendment. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And then Chair Tabke, if you'd like to respond, and then if we could move through the amendments, I think that would be.
Yeah, thank you. And I'll just go. So this is admittedly a bit of a clunky way of moving forward with this. I didn't expect that to happen until after the amendments, but I just appreciate everybody's thoughts and feelings on this. So what today's hearing, a lot of what we want to talk about today is the future of DVS. And so what I hear about as chair and before as is that a lot of people have concerns with the ability of not the ability, but with DVS and customer service and making sure DVS does a fantastic job and they've responded to a lot of different things. But as we look at the future and what this can look like into the future, there needs to be some changes that have to be legislatively led in order to improve the customer service, improve digital access to different sorts of documents, and improve the way that we are able to transfer titles and ownership and those kinds of things. And so those are what the A3 and the A4 amendments do. And so I'll just, Madam Chair, we can just skip through them today, but I just want to speak to them for really quickly, if that's okay.
Yes.
Yeah. So the A3 amendment is an e-signature and leading into e-titling. And so what this would do would be to make electronic liens so that the state of Minnesota would be able to electronically, instead of needing to go to a physical location to transfer liens, to get copies of titles and those kinds of things. And what the intent here is that we have a lot of folks, a lot of different states are able to do this as it is today. And so this would allow for e-signatures for when you purchase a vehicle online and when you do those kinds of things. And so this is something that the state of Minnesota needs to begin working on and needs to be, and this year obviously isn't the year for that, but this is something that we need to continue working on as this goes forward in order to make sure that we're modernizing our systems and being able to be accessible to everyone. And then the A4 amendment is when we start to do this is that a lot of those transactions are most, for the vast majority of Minnesotans, are most easily done online. And so those are all online or virtual transactions that will happen. And so what we have is we have a system of deputy registrars in the state of Minnesota that do a phenomenal job of taking care of our constituents. And they do a really, really great job of delivering customer service and being available all throughout the state of Minnesota. So this is not, as Mr. Hurst said, this is not intended whatsoever to get rid of the deputy registrar system. What it is doing is making sure that there is a funding mechanism that can work for deputy registrars. And so right now, deputy registrars are paid on a per transaction fee. And so that per transaction fee makes it really difficult to move things online and move things to where Minnesotans want us to take transactions and where Minnesotans want us to be looking 2, 3, 10 years down the road. And so what this is doing is building out the potential for a future mechanism that we can make sure to keep deputy registrars whole throughout the state. So we're able to pay deputy registrars via counties, and there are some issues that need to get worked out through there for sure. But that we still have a deputy registrar system that works for people, but isn't based on transactions. Because when we based on transactions and revenue sharing, what happens with that is that we are unable to keep these offices whole, and then they end up on property taxes. And so our property taxes right now in each of our counties, many of our counties are all paying for these deputy registrars, and it doesn't work. And so it's not something that can be into the future. And so this is an amendment into the future that will help reduce property taxes, will help improve customer service, and continue to work for Minnesotans so we have a modern DVS that will work better. So these are my attempts, not perfect by any stretch of the imagination, to show where I think we need to go and where I think that we can go legislatively in the future in the state of Minnesota. So e-titling is something that we, and electronic liens are something that we have to work on into the future, as well as working on getting a deputy registrar system that can be successful and work, because we, as Mr. Hurst said, we absolutely need humans involved in this process, especially for driver's licenses. We need people to do that work. So I will stop there. We don't need to have a ton of conversation on it, but if anybody has any questions, I'm happy to have those and discuss those. But this is just for future as to how we can do this to make our DVS system work better for Minnesotans. So I appreciate everyone's thoughts there.
Thank you for that, Chair Tapke. So we are going to withdraw the A3 amendment and the A4 amendment. And then I see that we have an A5 amendment. Representative Anderson, I see you have the A5 amendment. Could you please move and explain your amendment?
Thank you. I move the A5 amendment, and I can also start out with, admittedly, this is a clunky way to bring up an issue that we should be discussing as a committee. The A5 amendment essentially says we should not be issuing electronic driver's licenses to people who are not either U.S. citizens or are here legally. So it also, since we're talking more about the future of driver's licenses and the ability to ping various databases, and we have a lot of privacy issues too, we can very easily ping some of these other databases. So that's the amendment, and I ask for your support.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Are there any, Chair Tapke?
Thank you, Chair Ream. I encourage everyone to vote no on this, or for it to be withdrawn would be great as well, because this, many, many people who have driver's licenses are not U.S. citizens, and so this would take and limit who can get a driver's license in the state of Minnesota, would it not?
Representative Anderson.
Thank you. Chair Tabge, or lawful presence. So it isn't just citizens. It's if you're here lawfully and you're a non-citizen, you would be eligible for electronic driver's license.
Chair Tapke.
Thank you, Representative Anderson and Chair Ream. I appreciate that. Yeah, I appreciate the fact that you are accepting the fact that mobile driver's license, digital IDs are a more secure way of handling IDs and that. So I appreciate that. So I hope you'll vote for this in the future. But this is not something that I would like to accept at this point.
Thank you.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you. And I asked for a roll call. Thank you.
Okay. A roll call has been asked for. And then Representative Cagle, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Chair Tapke, we were around when we passed the driver's license for all. And that's a public safety issue. And so I don't understand why we would, if somebody legally obtains a driver's license, why would we make them any less than us? Like, if I can get it, I have a driver's license, why can't somebody who has that same driver's license have access to the same things that I have access to? I guess I'm just not understanding why we would put people in different caste systems, I guess. And so I think that has become a big issue in this country, is trying to other people. And I don't care what country they came from, if they're driving safely and they're a good neighbor, I don't care.
Thank you, Representative Cagle. Representative Anderson.
Thank you. We have very different opinions about people here and who are here in the country illegally. We're talking specifically people who are in the country illegally. I don't think they should be here in the first place, and I don't think we should be giving them documentation which they can use to drive, they can use for all sorts of purposes. So thank you.
Representative Myers. I'm sorry, Vice Chair Myers.
No, that's right. Thank you, Vice Chair Ream.
A question I had maybe for the bill author or DVS, when somebody is going to apply for a license, is this already being done to, for people that are applying for a picture ID or a license?
Chair Tapke.
Thank you very much, Chair Ream and Vice Chair Myers. I'm going to ask DVS to come up and talk through that process to how that works. As I understand, that what this would put driver's license holders in different categories based on electronic versus physical, but I'll let the director discuss.
Thank you, Chair Tapke. And if you could, if the testifier could please introduce himself and proceed.
Thank you. Pong Zhang, Director of the Driver and Vehicle Services Division. I believe the question was along the lines of what the process would be to apply and receive a mobile driver's license and the difference between the physical credential.
Vice Chair Myers.
Thank you, Co-Chair Ream. Just to clarify, I'm just wondering, is this currently taking place to somebody that's just looking to get a regular license, like a driver's license? The data check.
The data check. I'm not sure if I understand the question.
Is this already happening or not?
Oh, I see.
Thank you. Director Shaw.
Thank you. Apologies. I was so focused on the MDL. I think we're talking about the amendment. In current driver's license applications today, we only validate the documents that we are eligible to validate. So under a standard credential, we have limited verification under Real ID and the enhanced driver's licenses. There are required federal validations for some of these databases. Under the standard credential, I think that's what folks are talking about under DL for All. Those credentials are not run through any separate verification. We do make sure that they pass our general fraud detection procedures and that they are valid documents, but they aren't run through any sort of verification system today. We have a restriction on which verification systems we can actually use.
Vice Chair Myers. Representative Luger and Nicolai.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I had a question about what's on lines 1. What we've already talked about with respect to citizenship or lawful presence. My understanding is that an individual who may be an asylum applicant or otherwise lawfully in the country can be deemed a fugitive by their home country and then be not lawfully in the country here in the United States. So this would preclude that individual, irrespective of what country, whether they were friendly or repressive or had political motivations for describing someone as a fugitive. This would render them ineligible to have this credential. Is that correct, Madam Chair?
Thank you, Representative Luger and Nicolai. Are you asking Representative Anderson?
Yeah.
Okay. Representative Anderson.
Thank you. I'm going to refer to nonpartisan for this because it's a legal question.
Mr. Burris.
Madam Chair and members, I actually might defer to the department on this one as I look into it a little bit myself.
Yes, if Director Shaw could come up.
I guess so.
And once again, if you could just introduce yourself. Thank you.
Thank you. Pong Zhang, Director for the Driver and Vehicle Services Division. Currently today, we do not run any NCIC check on any of our applicants. I'm not even sure if that's something that we can do. I have the team actually checking into what those possibilities are. Again, today our credential application is outlined in Minnesota statute and identifies which documents we can and can't accept. We validate those documents in order to issue the credential.
Thank you. Representative Luger-Nicolai.
Madam Chair, I am concerned about the scope of this amendment, especially if it implicates individuals who are refugees. Typically, they've left their country because the country is inhospitable to them, and often it's a country that is inhospitable to the United States as well. And so I think if we don't know, Representative Anderson, Madam Chair, if we don't know what the effect of this is, then I think we need to find out before we adopt the amendment.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you. I had a little help, and I can answer the question now. If you look at line 1.7, it's the database that this is run through is the National Crime Information Center, Criminal Justice information system. And those are the things that are run through. So a foreign fugitive is a fugitive, would be someone that's a fugitive from their own country, their, you know, home country. This, the National Crime Information Center Criminal Justice Database is actually dealing with Americans, so it would be the opposite. So it would be an American fugitive that has flown to another country. Does that make sense? Is that helpful? So.
Representative Luger-Nicklin.
I think so. But I think the question I have, though, is confirmed as validly included, confirmed by whom?
Representative Anderson.
Thank you. It would be the Department of Public Safety. So they can run the names through. I think it's important. If we are out giving driver's licenses, electronic driver's license, but I would argue all, okay, to someone who is here in this country illegally and is a known or suspected terrorist on top of it, we would be doing a huge disservice to the whole country, but certainly to Minnesotans. And this would stop that. It would stop us giving Minnesota driver's licenses to known suspected terrorists that are here illegally. Thank you.
Representative Luger-Nicklin.
I'm sorry. I appreciate, madam, you recognizing me one more time. I share your concern about the safety of the individuals coming to this country and the risk that they may, you know, pose. I think the concern I have is if we are talking about individuals from Cuba, if we are talking about individuals from North Korea, if we are talking about individuals from a whole host of countries for whom defection in and of itself is a way that they may be deemed as a potential terrorist or deemed unsafe in our country, I think we got a problem, and I think not being able to sort through that yet makes this a premature amendment. That's my concern.
Thank you, Representative Luger-Nicklin. Representative Anderson.
Thank you. We just keep going back and forth, but these are for unlawful people who have come here, not people who are here because they're a refugee. That's covered. That is covered in 1.5, that line. So if you're here because you're a refugee lawfully, this doesn't apply to you. This applies to people who are in this country unlawfully, illegally, and it also allows us, as we're talking about creating more and more electronic things, which are data privacy concerns, but I think that's the way the world is probably going to go, it allows us and forces the department to actually ping this database, this criminal database, and make sure that these folks are not known terrorists that are here illegally. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Chair Tabke.
Thank you very much. And so this is a digital ID bill. This is not a bill about who has access to driver's licenses. This is not a bill for other things in that arena. And so what this amendment would do would make digital driver's licenses inconsistent with physical driver's licenses and inconsistent with Minnesota state law. So I ask everyone to vote no on this amendment.
Thank you, Chair Tabke. So seeing no further questions, let's move to the roll call. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Tabke.
No.
Tabke, no. Chair Kosnick.
Aye.
Kosnick, aye. Vice Chair Ream.
No.
Ream, no. Vice Chair Myers.
Nay.
Myers, nay. Representative Anderson.
Aye.
Anderson, aye. Representative Fogelman.
Yes.
Representative Fogelman, yes. Representative Green.
No.
Green, no. Representative Jones, excused. Representative Joy.
Yes.
Joy, yes. Representative Cagle.
No.
Cagle, no. Representative Kraft.
No.
Kraft, no. Representative Luger-Nicklin.
No.
Luger-Nicklin, no. Representative Murphy.
Yes.
Murphy, yes. Representative Olson.
Yes.
Olson, yes. Representative Sensimura.
No.
Sensimura, no. Representative Scraba.
Yes.
Scraba, yes. Madam Chair, the ayes are 7, the nays are 8, 1 excused.
So with 7 ayes, 8 nays, the motion does not prevail. We will now hear House File 1335 as amended. Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Chair Tabke. You know, the I heard a discussion, I think, from the person representing the deputy registrar about concern of them being on the hook if an electronic document was fraudulent. But I wonder if you could talk about it, because my understanding is that when you go electronic, there's a lot more tools to basically, and depending on the system you use, make it almost impossible to have a fraudulent document. And so my sense is going down this direction, we're done right, which I'm sure you want to do, but virtually can remove the opportunity for fraud.
Thank you, Representative Kraft. Chair Tabke.
Thank you very much, Chair Ream. So yes, thank you very much for that question. So he was specifically referring to the e-titling side of things and e-signatures. But for digital driver's licenses and digital IDs, what this would do is you're 100% correct, as this would virtually, nearly eliminate the ability for fraud to take place in this area. It would be much, much, much more secure. And it would be better for all of Minnesotans to be able to do this because there's a digital footprint that this would be utilizing. And it would be, if someone's driver's license is revoked, it would be immediately revoked digitally if something happened that way. So this would make things work a lot better. And as well is that it would still go through the deputy registrar through the driver's license process. So there'd be a physical person in charge of making sure that that person is exactly who they say they are and those kinds of things, as well as doing the eye test and the vision test and those kinds of things. So this would very much help with making sure that our IDs are even more protected in the state of Minnesota.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Tabke. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is in the language of this A1 amendment, which apparently was accepted but just not re-engrossed and all this great stuff. On page 2, you've got line 2.15. It says, page 2, line 17, before the, insert notwithstanding section 16A1283. From my understanding, that has to do with fees. Can you explain the fee structures that we're talking about here? Because it looks like we're providing a lot of leeway when it comes to the creation or the ability of the department to push fees on for these electric licenses. My big concern is that in a scenario where we have very little money and we're writing this legislation that just says fees, we could see the development of this program being laid onto the backs of the people who are applying for these electronic licenses, and you could find yourself with many, many, many hundreds of dollars for this application price if we're trying to pay for it just out of the words fees or whatever this notwithstanding section 16A is, if the chair has that information, or maybe House Research has that too.
Chair Tabke.
Thank you very much, Chair Ream and Representative Olson, for that question. And so exactly the A1 last year, I don't remember, but what we gave was rulemaking authority for the same as it happens right now with for fees for different transactions that take place and those kinds of things. And so I just want to reiterate with this that getting a digital ID is a 100% completely and totally personal choice as to whether you go forward and do this or not. A physical ID in this bill is still required wherever people go, so it is a personal choice whether someone wants to get a digital ID or wants to move forward that way. So it is whether someone would want to pay the fees for that or not is absolutely a personal choice.
Thank you, Chair Tabke. Rep. Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do you think House Research can provide some better identification of what notwithstanding Section 16A.1283 is?
Mr. Burris.
Madam Chair, Representative Olson, so that section is a statute that generally directs the executive branch around fee setting and establishes that executive branch or a state agency can't institute a fee or increase a fee without approval by law. So the amendment added a notwithstanding to explicitly override that provision. Arguably, that was already the case with the original bill because the original bill provided authority to the department to set a fee for this. So in some ways, it's a clarification that there's an override to the general limitation on fee setting as part of the authority that's being provided in the bill for setting a fee in this area.
Thank you, Mr. Burris. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So that right there is the biggest concern that I have regarding this piece of legislation. Sometimes I feel like we here in the legislature like to take our keys and throw them at someone else and say, here, take the keys and drive. And in some instances, I feel like we're throwing the keys to a 12-year-old saying, here, take the keys and drive, that being potentially the administration in some instances. And so that is a significant concern of mine. And as long as we're going to be doing that, I don't think that we should move forward with this. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Olson. Chair Tapke. No. Chair Kosnick.
Thank you. And just to kind of wrap up, at least from our side, I appreciate the, you know, kind of thinking outside the box and introducing some new concepts. Not really excited about having separate bills introduced as amendments. But so thank you for withdrawing those. And as stated before, there's a lot of privacy concerns. I think there's some public safety concerns that should be looked at. And we're just not ready to do this. Commerce concerns, as I mentioned before, and Representative Olson's comments also I would support in terms of providing more rulemaking and the ability to increase the fees, not just set them, but increase them down the road is problematic for us as well. So I'm going to recommend a no.
Thank you, Chair Kosnick. Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I really like this digital IDs. I like to walk out of the house with as little on me as possible, and so if I could just go anywhere with my phone, that'd be great. I do. I'm concerned with the tendency to like try and make everything about. I won't go there. But yeah, I just wanted to kind of address some of these. It's you know, we want to make sure that people have the driver's license and the rules of the roads, the understanding they need. I think, you know, too much micromanaging government is also a bad thing. And we're only here for a few months a year, so we kind of do have to let the departments do stuff when we're gone. And again, I think it's a good public safety measure because we're not, you know, it's harder for when my 18-year-old turns, or my 8-year-old turns eight, my 7-year-old turns 18, you know, this will probably be there. And so it'll be a lot harder for her to grab a friend's ID and go to the buy a keg like, I don't know, I did. You know, I think these are good common sense measures that we're looking at towards the future. And we can't stop progress. And I really wish that we would stop trying to offer amendments to make other people second-class citizens. And so I just really hope that we can continue this conversation and move this bill forward because it is a good public policy. It is a good public safety. It's good fraud, preventing fraud. And thank you for bringing it forward.
Thank you, Representative Cagle. Chair Tapke, any further words?
Yeah, I just appreciate everyone here. I really hope that we can move this forward. This is something that Minnesotans want to have done. I get lots and lots of, since I carried this last year, get lots and lots of folks who are asking for this. This is to Representative Anderson's questions about security and fraud and those things. These are more secure than a physical driver's license. They're public safety-wise, they are more safe for the people using them because they don't have to give over their date of birth. They don't have to give over their address. They don't have to give over whatever they don't want. They can select and choose. And it's working really well in 14 other states. And so you see this all over the nation being used. And I don't want Minnesotans to be left behind and the ability to do this. It's a really good, pragmatic step forward for our state and for the people of Minnesota. So I hope that everyone can think about moving this. And if if Chair Kosnick were willing to vote this forward, I would be happy to send it to Judiciary, but I don't see that happening today, so we'll just send it to Ways and continue from there.
Thank you, Chair Tabke. So, seeing no further discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? The motion does not prevail. So we will be renewing the motion that House File 1335, as amended, be referred to the Ways and Means Committee. No? Did I go wrong? Sorry. I just failed. Okay, sorry. The bill is laid over. Thank you.
Yep, just to clarify for the tape, the bill is laid over, did not pass.
Thank you. Yeah, I'll clarify that. So the bill is laid over, and that did not pass. So thank you very much.
All right, thank you very much. Secretary Ream. All right, now we have Representative Luger Nicolai with House File 3864.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. This bill, 3864, eliminates the need for registration tabs or stickers on license plates that just reflect the year and date of a registration. It creates a significant savings for the state by eliminating the need to produce and ship all the stickers. It has no impact on public safety. And importantly, individuals will still need to register their vehicles annually. This just really reduces costs associated with the sticker. So most other transactions are going to remain the same. This bill doesn't eliminate trailer registration tabs or other tabs that identify weight or size. Over time, I think we've learned that pulling Minnesotans over for tabs violations does not make traffic safer. It's not a moving violation. It doesn't correlate to whether or not somebody is going to speed. Lots of speeders have current tabs. And there's basically no organization suggesting that having expired tabs is at all linked to driver safety. Additionally, over 4 years ago, the Minneapolis Police Department indicated that they were no longer going to use tabs violations as a primary cause for pulling somebody over in the absence of an additional moving violation. Another jurisdiction has ended this requirement and found that citations for late registrations actually went up because they were able to run plates instead and find that sometimes there were fraudulent tabs that gave the wrong impression of actually having re-registered. So I'm more than willing to talk about the, I know there's amendments on the table, willing to talk about those because I think we can probably reach some rapprochement on this bill, but we are hopeful that the fact that this has a fairly minimal local impact and a fairly significant positive state impact makes this hopefully a bipartisan bill.
Thank you, Pat. Representative Nicolai moves to re-refer House File 3864 to public safety. And you have an author's amendment, A2.
Yes, the A2 creates, first of all, it kind of aligns it with the proper year, and then secondly, it realigns some of the language to maintain the fact that we are maintaining some sticker requirements, just not for standard vehicles.
Thank you. Discussion. Seeing none, all those in favor of the A2 amendment, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, the motion prevails. All right. With that, we have the A3 amendment. Chair Kosnick.
This wasn't actually my amendment, but we'll move the A3 amendment that requires traffic safety cameras to be used.
You can also punt this to whomever you'd like as well.
No, it got punted back to me.
Okay.
That the cameras be used, that are being used in the pilot programs, have the ability and to also read the license plates. And the purpose of this is so that the tabs that are being used, aside from other problematic issues in the bill, the tabs that are being used encourage the driving public to, number one, pay their annual registration that helps maintain our roads, and then also complies with that requirement in law. So removing the stickers causes a lot of problems for law enforcement to be able to make sure, help us to make sure that people are paying their correct tab fees.
And with that, we have A5, which is amendment to, sorry, they, A5 amendment, which is the amendment to the A3. So, Representative Centimere.
Yes. Thank you, Chair Tapke. Thanks, Chair Kosnick, for the amendment. I was excited to see some bipartisan support for the traffic safety camera program, and just want to again bring up the idea that I think there's a lot of ways that these cameras can be used to support traffic safety and making our roads safer statewide. So we previously heard House File 3431, which would make the pilot program be able, with municipal consent, to be in any local jurisdiction. And so this is adding that to your amendment. Thank you.
Chair Cousin.
We previously had discussion on that bill. Did not have support. So I'm not supporting, I don't believe there's support for this amendment.
Further discussion? All right, seeing none, all those in, oh.
Can I just say, I will, I mean, I would support Representative Kosnick's amendment with the Senator Murrah's amendment to it. I understand the need for some alternative verification method in addition to the visual that our officers also get. And so I think we could have peace in the valley on that.
Further discussion? All right, we'll be voting on the A5 amendment to the A3 amendment. Representative Centimere, do you have any final comments? All right, seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
No.
Why didn't you roll call it? The motion does not prevail. Yeah. All right, the A3 amendment. Discussion on the A3 amendment. I want to reiterate the fact that we know for a fact that I'm frustrated that Representative Centimere's bill didn't pass the other day. Representative, on a second chance to do this today, you didn't take it today, because what that does was make Minnesota more safe. We know for a fact, there was just a huge article that just came out, I believe it was this weekend or earlier, that end of last week, that talked about how effective these speed cameras are in the state of Minnesota, and that we know for a fact they are saving lives. We know for a fact that they are making Minnesotans more safe, and that where it is that we have them, it is working. And we know that our law enforcement needs help in making sure that we are catching people who are driving unsafe. We have an epidemic of people who are speeding, running red lights, doing driving recklessly, and it is just frustrating to me that we can't take this next step, or even some sort of like variation, gradation of the next step, so to keep more Minnesotans safe, and that's what that amendment would have done. And it seems like you agree that they can work and that they can do things, which is why you brought this amendment. So would have been happy to put this amendment on, but I also believe that public safety, law enforcement, should be providing public safety work to Minnesotans, and making sure that someone has paid their tabs and making sure that someone has paid their taxes is not public safety work. I want our public safety police officers, troopers, county sheriffs to be focused on public safety, which is reducing people who are driving recklessly, reducing people who are running red lights and hurting people. That's what I want our, and making sure to build community efforts and making sure that we're doing the right things to have the safest, best possible communities that we have. And having troopers out checking to make sure that tabs have been paid doesn't do a thing for public safety. So this is the perfect type of application for speed cameras, but we're not going to do this just in one little spot in the state. We're going to make sure that if we're going to do this, we're going to make sure that this applies equally across the state of Minnesota. So, Chair Kosnick.
Thank you, Chair Tabke, Representative. You know, I appreciate, and you're welcome to your opinions and your frustrations, and I hear them, but we're not all entitled to our own facts. on our side, we'd say there it's a fact that Minnesotans are concerned about growing surveillance. It's a fact that Minnesotans are concerned about their data privacy. They are not comfortable across the state with having government monitor their moves in a vehicle or not. And that is where this leads to. So different facts, different opinions. If you're going to do remove an enforcement mechanism and an incentive for the driving public to have tabs on their car, this amendment will simply continue the pilot program that is still in its pilot program. We're not ending it. To allow those cameras to also read the enforcement of the tabs.
Well, okay. So I thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Chair Kosnick. I'm a little bit at sixes and sevens on the sort of the amendment versus the advocacy that I'm hearing just right now, because I think that in any way these tabs are enforced, it is surveillance. It is either human visual surveillance or it may be read by one of these machines. And so the real question is, does it make sense if this is the way that we want to go to expand the pilot so that we can actually get more data? And to be honest, I don't really love the surveillance either. But I know that we actually probably have a chance of obtaining more revenue if the cameras are more accurate because they're busting people who would otherwise be using fraudulent tabs, which is data that came from Pennsylvania. So I still think that we should consider the bill as is. I'm not willing to take the A3 without the A5. And so I would recommend a no vote.
Further discussion? Oh, thank you. Further discussion? Chair Kosnick.
Thank you. There was a few different things mentioned there. The underlying bill has problems in a number of different ways, and we'll get there. But understand that drivers, this is a fact from the National Institute of NIH, drivers without valid registrations are 3 times more likely to cause fatal accidents. So the underlying bill has problems. However, if you're going to do that, have that, the A3 amendment at least has it where there are existing camera pilot programs that they can read the readers, or read the tabs. So members, it makes common sense to support the A3, and some of the authors' comments actually support that as well.
Representative Luger-Nicolai, I keep trying to say it too fast. I'm sorry.
It's not built for speed. I feel as if there is actually not very much daylight between us, and I am concerned a little bit about correlation and causation on the question of the individuals causing fatal accidents. However, I think in this instance, I'm going to recommend a no vote on this, unless it contains an expansion of the pilot to actually make it an effective system of surveillance.
All right, with that, we have the A3 amendment in front of us. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no.
No.
The motion prevails.
What?
Why?
Right?
The motion.
No, you. No. All right, then it does not prevail. You can give it to me if you want. That's fine. All right, so we have now the A4 amendment.
That's mine, Mr. Chair. The A4 amendment is my amendment. It would provide for the requirement of all of our peace officers to have the capability of scanning these plates and identifying if this individual has, in fact, paid their registration. Now, the chair made a comment previously that he doesn't want his police and peace officers out there on the roads validating people's taxes and registration, and that is a valid concern. But also understanding that a camera will never respond to an emergency. And so my biggest fear when we're talking about these cameras is that you will provide the ability of people removing peace officers from the roads, saying you don't need to be out there protecting and serving, because guess what? We got all these cameras that are enforcing the roads, but a camera will never respond to an accident. A camera will never respond to any form of an emergency whatsoever. And so as a result, we should provide our peace officers the ability to manage these tabs as well, give them the technology, reimburse the cities and the counties that are in fact doing this work for the implementation of the technology. Because one of my other fears is, I have a problem. This is like a balancing act for me. There's the concept of following the law, and the law says pay your tab fees, but there is no enforcement. So if you're not going to enforce it, do we do it? Should we do it? What's the fiscal note on this? Is there a way, like, is the department looking at how much currency or revenue will be lost through people who say, no, you won't see anything. The peace officers won't see it. They don't have the technology to run the plates. They're not going to take the time to call in or do whatever they have to do to enforce this. So why would we do it? And, you know, I hate tab fees, so maybe we should just do it. And then if we accept this, make it law, we don't have tab fees anymore. And I'll be okay with that too. So whatever you want to do with that, I would like to provide our peace officers the ability to enforce the law as it's written and not provide people the ability to circumvent the law. And so that's what this amendment would do. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Luger-Nicolai.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, and thanks, Representative Olson. I think we are in agreement that we shouldn't supplant peace officers in the work that they do, and I don't support that. And I actually think, as long as we're still kind of talking about the framework of Representative Sensenbrenner's bill versus the reality that we're currently living in, there was testimony in that bill that it didn't do that either, and that some peace officers actually welcomed the opportunity to do other things that were more correlated to solving public safety issues. What I am a little bit concerned about is the potential local impact or the potential cost of retrofitting a lot of cars, and I will say that the bill comes at a pretty significant savings to the state, not a revenue loss. And so there are already penalties for not maintaining your license, your registration. And I'm not going to say I know that necessarily from personal experience, but I kind of know it from personal experience that you end up paying a lot more for the next set if you don't pay for the first set. And so those assumptions I believe are taken into account. And I don't see a current fiscal note posted. The preliminary fiscal note showed a significant savings, not a loss, not an expenditure.
Representative Olson and Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wonder if House Fiscal staff could maybe look and let us know if they're currently evaluating. Are they under the assumption that every person is going to pay their tabs if there's no way of knowing if you paid them or not?
Mr. Chair, Representative Olson, first to the fiscal note question, there is a fiscal note requested for this bill. I requested it as soon as the language was introduced. On an earlier draft of language, I requested a fiscal note and have those numbers if the committee would like to hear them. I would want DPS to speak to what they would think enforcement rates would be, depending on whether or not TAS would be. But, Mr. Chair, if you want me to run through what the fiscal note was for earlier draft language, I would be happy to do that.
Give us the high levels, if you could.
So, Mr. Chair, members, there's a few moving parts in here, that the fiscal note noted. One was expenditures for DVS to enact the proposed legislation and the changes. That was about $155,000 from the driver and vehicle services account. And then the largest fiscal component of the draft was about $1.4 million in fiscal 2027 in savings for not having to print the tabs, and then a revenue loss because of fewer fees being paid, about $10,000 to the general fund and $26,000 to the driver and vehicle services operating account. And I should note that those numbers would have changed a little bit with the amendment just adopted, but that's a sense of the fiscal impact of the bill. And I would defer to the department in terms of enforcement.
Okay, we're going to run out of time on things here today. So, Representative Olson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, the department's here. Do you think we can just get a quick concept of how they believe they'll be able to enforce this and bring the tab fees and continue the revenue that the law entails without individuals trying to circumvent it?
Director Zhang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Pong Zhang, Director of the Driver and Vehicle Services Division. As part of our contemplation for the implementation of this proposal, We did not make any assumptions about a reduction or an increase in vehicle registration. The department does not enforce registration. We merely administer the registration and make it possible for Minnesotans to renew their vehicle on time.
Representative Olson.
Well, hope springs eternal on that one then, Mr. Chair. If you don't have any form of enforcement on this, I can almost guarantee you, you will have no payments for it. So you are current, I guess we could take a vote on this and say, do we want to end tab fee registrations today or do we want to push them on? Because in the current language, I'm maybe thinking about voting for this so that we can just get rid of it. Just be like, tab fees, done. Loving it. All right, please vote yes on this amendment to actually enforce our laws.
Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So cameras don't write tickets. There's people behind those cameras that write the citations. They have to review it. It's evidence. And so the cameras don't write tickets. And so, again, I just, you know, my mind gets boggled by this committee sometimes. I just wanted to remind people that there's people behind those citations. And so just this whole automatic thing. And last year I drove around for 6 months without my tabs because I forgot my tabs are due during session. So maybe if I would have gone through Minneapolis and gotten a reminder that my tabs were due, I would have paid them earlier. Because that piece of paper ends up in a pile somewhere really quick and then in the recycling really quick. And so I think like not holding up future things that will help our police officers, that will give them more tools and allow them to actually address public safety issues. And you know what? I didn't get pulled over one time last year either when I had 6 months of the wrong tabs. So I think this would actually flag more people without tabs than it would, just allowing people scot-free. But if we're not going to do it to everybody and we're only just going to, you know, target people in Minneapolis, then that's a little ridiculous again. So thank you for bringing this bill forward.
All right, closing comments on the A4 amendment, Representative Luger-Nicolai, and then Representative Olson.
I appreciate the discussion that we're having, and I want to be clear, it is still possible to run plates irrespective of whether or not you have the sticker. And what they found in Pennsylvania is that it's not that hard to make a rectangle and draw a number on it. And so they actually did better when they eliminated stickers because there was less fraud with respect to the stickers. And so I think that the net benefit of this is pretty straightforward. And I think that adding additional cost of retrofitting the cars doesn't add a lot of value.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's where we'll disagree. If you don't have any enforcement capabilities, you won't have any revenue, which I guess I'm okay with as well, because I hate tab fees myself. But I think that the fiscal note or whatever the original one is just woefully inadequate because they're not taking into account the fact that human beings are human beings. Their behavior is easily identified. And this is one area where if you are not required, you will not do it. Vote for the amendment, please.
I just want to be very, very clear on this, that this bill is not requiring or allowing people to not pay tabs. It is still very, very illegal to not pay your tabs, Representative Cagle. And so, but I just want to make sure that that's very clear, that that's not what this is doing at all. There still is enforcement. There still is, you wouldn't be able to drive a vehicle if it doesn't have current tabs, and it would still come up, and it would still be part of the system. So all those in favor of the A4 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? No. The motion does not prevail. All right, we have a couple of testifiers on this, and we're going to keep this to 2 minutes so we can still get to one more bill here. Jim Hurst, and then Sam Krueger. Please state your name and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Once again, Jim Hurst with the Minnesota Deputy Registrars Association. We are opposed to the legislation before you today, and I would like to thank the comments by some of you here. You know, the matter comes down to compliance, and I think one thing that everyone is forgetting here, is that the vast majority of the registration tax that people pay goes to the Road and Bridge Fund. I have no idea what MnDOT's recommendation is on this. I appreciate public safety's, DVS's comments on it. But, you know, bottom line is, if individuals do not have to display the tab, they will choose to forget it. They will conveniently forget it. If they are stopped by law enforcement, they mean, oh, geez, I totally forgot. You know, give me a fix-it ticket. Yeah, I promise I'll pay it. Whether they do or not, who knows? Here's another thing to keep in mind. Individuals, when they wish to sell their vehicle, let's say it's a private transaction between two individuals. I've got my vehicle here. I'm selling it to another party. That person probably doesn't realize, well, they don't know if the registration tax has been paid or not. But then that new owner is going to come into a deputy registrar office and goes, hey, I want to transfer the title into my name. I just bought it. Great. We'll look it up and we'll say, gee, the registration hasn't been paid for the last 2 years. Who's responsible for that? The new owner? I don't think so. That's not fair. So, and that will tie up the transfer of the title, but it's something that, bottom line is, I think from a public policy standpoint, compliance with the registration tax is essential for the safety of our Road and Bridge Fund. And, you know, again, people are people. If you're not required to put it on there, they're not going to think to pay the registration tax. This will definitely hit the deputy registrars because half of our transaction, half of our renewals are done by deputy registrars. It used to be 100%, but now the state of Minnesota has taken half of that away from online transactions and everything, which is why revenue sharing, which we discussed earlier, is critical because we are losing out. Now, we have been dying a slow death of 1,000 slice cuts.
Thank you, Mr. Hurst.
This bill is going to totally take off a couple of limbs. Thank you. That's all I have to say.
Thank you. Mr. Krueger.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you. Sam Krieger with the Deputy Registered Business Owners Association. I agree with Jim. This really kind of comes down to a numbers game. This will drive people out of the offices. You know, we value volume for a reason. These numbers, these filing fees are static. They are set in the legislature. And so this would be really hard on the deputies. And so I would encourage you, as you're looking at this legislation, which is clearly aimed at convenience and other legislation like it, please consider revenue sharing in a robust manner that helps not just the publics but also the private deputies.
Thank you very much. And, yeah, you're absolutely correct. This bill is 100% aimed at convenience and making sure that Minnesotans are able to pay their tabs and not have to worry about all the other things that are involved as well. Mr. Scraba, Representative Scraba.
Thank you, Chair. very quickly, everyone's saying it's not going to cost any money. Ask the state of Pennsylvania how much they've lost. Ask the state of Washington how much they've lost. You know how much money they've lost? Anywhere from $50 million to $100 million. That's because people aren't paying their tabs. You know why they're not paying their tabs? Because they don't have to. Unfortunately, we have a member who forgot for 6 months. There are people actually not paying their tabs. So here's the best one. You said, how can fraud? It could be fraud. You know how you beat this system? When you register your vehicle, you forget, instead of 1033 East Harvey, I put 1034. I write all illegal anywhere. All the bills go to 1034. They don't go to 1033, my address. It goes somewhere else. And by doing that, I mean, reading this stuff, it's mind-numbing. It is mind-numbing how much money is being lost in these states. And then here's the best part. They go back and say, well, the way we fix it is we go and hire someone to go do this to collect the money. You know how you collect the money? You make people physically go buy their tabs. That's the system that's there now. You pay your money, you get your tab, you drive. That is a foolproof system. You can't say, oh, I don't know where they went. I don't know what happened to them. You forgot to pay them. Here's your ticket. I don't understand why do you think this is going to be so much better and easier. It's not. The system is set up now. It raises, the state of Minnesota has roughly 5.26 million vehicles. If you don't think 3 or 4% of those people are never going to pay their tabs, you're kidding yourself. Because there are people out there that will always do it because they can. And again, if you want to cheat the system, learn how the system works, and then you cheat the system. The way it is now, if your address isn't put in right, the register didn't put it in right. Not me at home or on my computer at 2 in the morning whenever I want to register my vehicles. This is a terrible bill. This is terrible for every reason I can think of. I can't see why. At first blush, I thought this was going to be, we'll see how it goes. The more research I did, the more I just went, for every reason, the way it's set up now, there's been a lot of smart people getting to this point. I think we stay the course and we vote against this bill. Thank you.
Testifiers can go ahead and sit down. That's all right. Representative Luger-Nicolai. Do you have anything you wanted to respond to that or no?
Yeah, okay. So a couple things. I have never gone to a physical location to purchase my tabs in my life. So it is still it is currently possible to do that online. However, it does cost the state money to produce them and ship them around, and that would be eliminated with this bill. On the other hand, anybody who currently goes to a physical location in order to get their license registration renewed is still going to do that because they already do that. Another thing is, like Representative Cagle, I have on occasion driven around with expired tabs. And it is not because I'm a scofflaw, and it is not because I hate our state or our bridges, but it's sometimes you forget. And so I think that's where the question of the correlation to being law-abiding is questionable. Thirdly, I am thrilled that I have finally cracked a code that will enable us all to agree on the importance of raising revenue. And so I at some point may offer an amendment to quintuple the rates of these registration fees so that we may fund other projects in the state that everybody deems worthy.
Thank you, Representative Luger-Nicolai. All right, seeing very quickly.
Very quickly. So I own two canoes, too, and they have tabs. And I can tell you that I don't remember to do it until I look up on the canoe when I'm going to take it and go, oh, it's expiring this year, or it's expired. So people need to be reminded sometimes, okay, at least in regards to things like canoes, right? We dramatically raised license tab fees 2 years ago. Not we, the trifecta, dramatically raised license tab fees. There are a lot of people that are upset about the cost of tab fees now, like everybody's upset about the cost. And I think you're going to see more and more people, you know, especially if you do something like this, they won't be paying them because of the cost of the fees. And so, you know, like the canoe, when I look up and go, oh, it's 26, it expires, everyone can see people's license. I can see my kid's license. I can see my friend and go, oh, your tabs are expiring next month. They're expired. Your tabs are. It is a constant reminder to people to do it, to pay it, you know, and I think you'd have a better, you know, shot at if we didn't have very high tab fees to begin with, then maybe we wouldn't be so worried about this. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Anderson.
Yeah, one thing that I do every year is pay my state income tax, which I don't get a tab for. And so I do think that there is a lot of compliance irrespective of getting a sticker, although it does now, the more I think about it, sound like a lot of the work that my teachers do when I am in my day job.
Got it. Thank you. All right. Did you have any closing comments or anything you'd like to do, Representative Luger-Nicolai?
Yes. I think this bill saves money. I think that it does not deter enforcement, and I think that I trust our law enforcement to use the tools available to them currently. And the experience in Pennsylvania was that the number of citations for unregistered vehicles increased by 52%. And so that suggests to me that, in fact, it could potentially be a revenue raiser, but it does require relying on more than just the sticker, which is potentially reproduced easily. So I hope that folks vote for this bill.
No, public safety. Thank you, Representative Luger-Nicolai. And I just want to also just make one last comment. I apologize for going after you. Is that Representative Scraba, if you could send that to the committee, what you had for fines, because that's what you said there is the opposite of what all the data that I've seen shows, is that they have done nothing but increase revenues based on this. So that's why I asked you to send it to the committee. So.
No, I will not.
All right. AI isn't always correct. You have to check the sources, remember. So, Chair Koznick.
We've heard there's a lot of implications to this bill that are not in agreement and have some a lot of concerns with, so I'm recommending a no vote.
So, Chair Representative Luger-Nicolai recommends that House File 3864 be re-referred to the Committee on Public Safety. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
The motion does not prevail. All right. We are going to move to Representative Cagle's bill. We're going to skip the transponder bill for today. Representative House File 3728. As she's going up there, we will move the House File 3728 be laid over, and we've got a couple of testifiers, so we'll get that moving as well. So, Representative Cagle, if you will introduce your bill and move it on to your first testifier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. After the conversations, I don't know if I have high hopes for this, but, you know, House File 3728 is about fiscal responsibility and how we manage our trunk highway system so we can achieve the best outcomes for Minnesotans and the communities across our state. This concept is straightforward, maintaining our existing roads before making any new plans to expand, and then plan to manage our assets better, which I know this is something that I've been working on for a really, really long time. Us being asset managers, just not people managing assets. And here's why this matters right now. We face a tightening state budget. We have heard for years and years and years that MnDOT projects a 15 to $20 billion shortfall in the next 20 years in just maintaining our roads. We know what this administration has done to federal funding. There's been the forecast that we saw last week said that if the federal bill isn't reauthorized, we could lose up to 30% of our federal funding, and there's actually probably higher numbers that we've seen as well. Minnesota has the fourth largest road system in the country. Why? And we can't afford to fix it, so it's putting a heavy burden on Minnesotans. And also, failure to maintain our roads costs us every year in money to repairs, on average about a $500 a year. So money is tight. Our needs are growing, and we really need to figure out how we're going to maintain our system and minimize the costs to hardworking families. We know that this means we need to build things that last longer, and that we take care of what we have. And so here's what this bill does. It establishes a fix-it-first fiscal guide rail. If roads and bridges aren't being maintained to standards, new capacity expansion projects cannot be added to the funding plan because we won't be able to afford them until we meet those standards. It creates long-term maintenance planning to minimize cost and maximize value of every highway dollar maintained, and adds a fiscal transparency portal, which I know MnDOT has already been working on, but if we can get that even more robust, we could track how their money is being spent and where it is all going. Here's what the bill doesn't do. It does not ban highway expansion outright. It requires strong fiscal oversight so we can be honest about what we can afford and how we can afford to grow the system. It does not stop safety projects. Highway expansions are often not the best way to make roads safer and the more expensive approach. We cannot expand our way to safety and traffic flow, but we can design our roads better to move people and commerce more quickly and more safely. It does not affect any current programs that are already programmed, and then it does not direct us to spend any less money on transportation. And it doesn't take away any good paying jobs. It just makes sure that we are focusing on maintenance and our infrastructure. And so with that opening, I will call up the testifiers. And I know Mr. Harrington was here to kind of offer some testimony as well, but we'll move to testifiers in the
okay.
Because of time.
Thank you. Appreciate mm-hmm. Mr. Harrington. So we've got a testifier online, Corgan Salerno from Transportation for America. And if you can take 90 seconds, sir, we're going to go a little over time to get the testifiers in, and then we'll lay the bill over. So, Corgan, please begin.
All right, thank you. Well, thank you, Co-Chair Tapke and Co-Chair Kosnick, and also the other members of the House Transportation Committee, for the opportunity to speak in support of Representative Cagle's bill, House File 3728. Just want to quickly about T4A. We are a national nonprofit working to promote sustainable, smart transportation infrastructure policy that prioritizes investment in safety over speed, maintenance, and transportation choice. We just wanted to say that this bill comes really in at a critical time, given the conversations happening federally and also considering what is achievable nationally. So For a quick summary of my remarks, Minnesota is reporting a maintenance backlog of around $3.5 billion for a funding gap to meet their maintenance targets for pavements and bridges in the state. And while this program is, or this problem is significant, it's not a unique one. According to research from Pew Charitable Trust, there are 23 other states that report a funding gap. However, just because the problem is common nationally does not mean that Minnesota cannot be a leader in solving it. And in fact, the state does not need to be a leader to solve that problem. There are eight other states, including Maine, Montana, Idaho, and Indiana, that are reporting no funding gap given their program funding. And further, Minnesota is spending below the national average on repair, as well as the average among those states that are meeting those maintenance performance maintenance targets without reporting a funding gap. Given the federal conversation right now on surface transportation reauthorization, there is a significant shortfall in revenues for the Highway Trust Fund and the revenues into the program versus the outlays. With the federal bill, we are concerned about different trends that point us towards the future levels of funding for the successor of the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act being lower than previous years. Recently,
thank you, sir.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. If you can finish up. You're okay. All right. Appreciate it. Thank you. Next, we'll have Brad Utech from MnDOT. Then we'll have John Sigmeier. Please state your name and begin.
Good afternoon, Chair Tapke, members of the committee. My name is Brad Utech, statewide planning manager with MnDOT. The department appreciates the interest in asset management and long-range planning in the bill. However, we do have some specific comments on the contents. In Section 1, we do have a funding gap and are not projected to meet our asset management needs for pavement and bridge. Unless the legislature passes a significant funding increase, we anticipate having a gap for the foreseeable future. In terms of the project management plans, we have started to develop similar plans for major bridges. However, the requirement to do that for all major projects is a wide expansion of those types of plans. In Section 2, that sort of adjusts the CHIP language that we have currently. We think this is cleaner, but we do have some concerns about the specific requirements, particularly expanding and forecasting necessary funding over 60 years. We currently have trouble projecting funding over 20 years for our long-range plan. Going to 60 years becomes difficult as well. We'd like some clarification about the trunk highway requirements of identifying removal for trunk highway segments, just on how that's worded. And then Section 3, those requirements largely meet the federal requirements for the Transportation Asset Management Plan, or the TAMP. We agree with that. However, we'd prefer some of the asset classes to be optional that are listed. We've found that some of those assets do not work well for the TAMP process. And there's a federally required TAMP for transit. So we recommend that we do not include that as there is a separate transit asset management plan.
Thank you.
We have some specific comments on Fiscal Transparency Dashboard 2. But in interest of time, I won't get into that. So
appreciate
thanks for your time.
Thank you. John Sigmeier, followed by Nazner Kadi.
Thank you, Chair members. My name is John Sigmeier. I'm a MnDOT engineer, retired. We're super brief, but happy to answer questions, stay here in the future. Why am I here? Stewardship of our public assets, maintain the roads we have. I spent 27 years at MnDOT. I'm a structural engineer, a geological engineer. So at MnDOT, I'm the foundation's guy for pavements. So super important to me. I'm still here, retired, because I care. A lot of people at MnDOT care about the assets that they are maintaining. So in 2014, I was a volunteer for this committee with Representative Bernardi. I volunteered. MnDOT gave me time off to come over here and volunteer and move this performance measurement stuff ahead. At that time, MnDOT, the deputy commissioner was Tracy Hatch. She had a program which was enhancing financial effectiveness. And Representative Bernardi and Tracy Hatch were on the same page.
They both wanted accountability, transparency, and performance measurement. And that's what the underlying statute that you're working on, when that was created, those were the objectives. And so we're just, this current bill is just taking that to the clarifying what was done at the legislature previously, and I want to lean into just two words in this bill.
Quickly, sir.
They are annual targets, and professional engineer is responsible.
Thank you.
And so those two words need to be included, or we're going to not make the progress that we need to make as a state. Thank you very much.
Appreciate it. Thank you. And we've got two more testifiers quickly, and then we will lay the bill over and adjourn. Naz Narkati from Move Minnesota and Shane Zart from Coalition Greater Minnesota Cities. Please stay
here.
Thank you.
Chair Tapke, Chair Kosnick, to the rest of the committee, thanks for letting me come speak today in support of the legislation. I will read my remarks quickly. I'm Nas. I'm the Policy and Community Specialist for Move Minnesota Action, where we advocate for a sustainable transportation system in the state of Minnesota. MnDOT estimates that in the next 20 years, and as we've heard today, $21 billion in available revenues will be available to address about $39 billion in identified needs, and there's a funding gap of $15 to maybe $18 billion. About $3 to $4 billion in that gap are pavement and bridge conditions. We do not need to exacerbate an already dramatic fiscal reality with continuous highway expansion. It's also true that the miles of pavement in poor condition will increase significantly by the end of the 20-year planning period, incurring the new costs of new highway projects instead of prioritizing maintenance as a status quo that should be rejected. The legislation before you today is a great idea and it's common sense. Our highway system is aging. There is a continuous growing need to maintain our already existing infrastructure, and if we have a system in place that favors highway expansion, we'll find ourselves either overextending financially or stuck with a system where our maintenance backlog continues to grow. We should choose to fix it first. Thank you so much for your time and consideration today. I hope you vote in favor of the legislation. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much. Shane Zart from Coalition Greater Minnesota Cities.
Hello. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sorry, Mr. Chair. Yes, Mr. Chair, Shane Zart from Flaherty and Hood, and here today representing the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. Ultimately, testifying with some concerns about the bill, but want to acknowledge what I think every other testifier and the author have, which is that our transportation system is underfunded, and we need to continue to work on that element. Why I'm sitting here today, though, is the bill, as drafted, I think is just too blunt of an instrument for our members in Greater Minnesota, where we've had over time projects that would meet the definition of capacity expansion that have been the answer to some critical safety concerns or some of the long needed corridors like 14, 23, 212, and so on, where not just expansion but maybe grade separation and some of the similar projects have been the type that have been needed to address safety concerns throughout the state. So as it is, I think we're open to any discussion about how to maximize the transportation funding we have. In fact, I think the creation of the Corridors of Commerce program back in 2013 was an acknowledgement of this same thing. We don't have enough money to maintain our road system, but let's create a mechanism to get around that by finding an evaluation criteria for what projects can rise to the top nonetheless outside of MnDOT's maintenance and preservation program. So thank you for your consideration today, thank you for the ongoing discussion with Chair Cagle.
Thank you.
And the advocates.
Appreciate it. Closing comments, Chair Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sorry that we had to rush through this. I think this is a really great fiscally conservative bill that looks at the future of our transportation system and gets to the root cause of why we're spending so much money, that we're not maintaining our assets, and we need to do that in order to be fiscally responsible. So thank you very much. I move that House File 3728 be laid over for possible inclusion.
Without House File 3728 is laid over, and we are adjourned. Thank you, everybody.